Hello and welcome to another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. Tonight we bring back two of our favorites, Birdie and Jeeves, and yet another comic tale by the master of the frivolous, P.G. Wodehouse. This tale is called Jeeves and the Chump Cyril. As usual in these stories, Birdie and Jeeves are in a feud over wardrobe selections. Birdie's Aunt Agatha is hanging over him like a dark shadow, and there is a friend in need, in this case Cyril. But it's always better to let Birdie tell his own stories. Let's hear what he has for us this evening.
You know, the longer I live, the more clearly I see that half the trouble in this world is caused by the light-hearted and thoughtless way letters of introduction get tossed about. I don't mind admitting that at first, when Jeeves told me that someone called Cyril Bassington Bassington had arrived from the old country with a letter of introduction to me from Aunt Agatha, I was rather relieved. You see, after the painful events which had forced me to cut my visit with Aunt Agatha short and resulted in my leaving England abruptly, I hadn't expected to get any sort of letter from her which would pass the censor, so to speak. The fact that Aunt Agatha was writing to me without calling me names seemed, more or less, like a hopeful sign, and so I'm bound to say I looked on the chump Bassington Bassington, when he arrived, more or less as a dove of peace, and was all for him. He blew in one morning, ringing the bell at the ghastly time of 7:45, and was given the respectful raspberry by Jeeves.
I am deeply sorry, Mr. Bassington Bassington, that Mr. Worcester is not available at the moment. Perhaps if you came back in a few hours, you could improve your chances of seeing Mr. Worcester.
Yes, another 3 hours would give me a sporting chance of having sprung from my bed with a glad cry to welcome another day and all that sort of thing, which was rather decent of Jeeves, by the way, for it so happened that there was a slight estrangement, a touch of coldness, a bit of a row, in other words, between us at the moment because of some purple socks which I had been wearing against his wishes. And a lesser man might have easily snatched at the chance of getting back at me a bit by loosing Cyril into my bedchamber before I had my early cup of tea and a chance to brood on life for a bit. So Jeeves very sportingly shot Cyril out into the crisp morning air and didn't let me know of his existence till he brought his card in with my tea. And what might this be, Jeeves?
The gentleman has arrived from England, I understand, sir. He called to see you earlier in the day.
Good Lord, Jeeves, you don't mean to say that the day starts earlier than this.
He desired me to say he would return later, sir.
I've never heard of him. Have you ever heard of him, Jeeves?
I am familiar with the name Bassington Bassington, sir. There are three branches of the Bassington Bassington family, the Shropshire Bassington Bassingtons, the Hampshire Bassington Bassingtons, and the Kent Bassington Bassingtons.
England seems pretty stocked up with Bassington Bassingtons.
Tolerably so, sir.
And what sort of specimen is this one?
I could not say, sir, on such short acquaintance.
Will you give me a sporting 2-1, Jeeves, judging from what you have seen of him, that this fellow is not a leech or an excrescence?
No, sir, I should not care to venture such liberal odds.
I knew it. Well, the only thing that remains to be discovered is how big a leech he is.
Time will tell, sir. The gentleman brought a letter for you, sir.
Oh, he did he? Let me see it. Oh, no, Jeeves. This is from my Aunt Agatha.
Indeed, sir.
Don't dismiss it in that light way. Don't you see what this means? She says she wants me to look after this excrescence while he's in New York. You know, Jeeves, if I only fawn on him a bit so that he sends back a favorable report to headquarters, I may yet be able to get back into Aunt Agatha's good graces. Jeeves, we must rally round and pamper this sot in no uncertain manner.
Yes, sir.
According to the letter, he isn't going to stay in New York for long. He's headed for Washington, going to look it over before taking a whirl at the diplomatic service. I bet we can win this lad's esteem and affection with a lunch and a couple of dinners, wouldn't you say?
I fancy that should be entirely adequate, sir. Now, if you will allow me to set out your clothes for the day.
Not those socks, Jeeves. Give me the purple ones.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Those bright purple ones.
Very good, sir.
He lugged them out of the drawer as if he were a vegetarian fishing for a caterpillar out of a salad. Very painful, this sort of thing. But a man has got to assert himself every now and then. I was looking for Cyril to show up again any time after breakfast, but he didn't appear. So towards 1 o'clock I headed for the Lambs Club, where I had an appointment with an old friend named Caffin, George Caffin, a fellow who writes plays and whatnot. Caffin was a bit late, saying he'd been held up at a rehearsal of his new musical comedy, Ask Dad. We were having coffee when the waiter came up and said that Jeeves wanted to see me. Jeeves was in the waiting room. He gave the socks one pained look as I came in, and then he averted his eyes.
Mr. Bassington has just telephoned, sir.
Oh?
Yes, sir.
Where is he?
In prison, sir.
In prison?
Yes, sir. He said on the telephone that he had been arrested. He would be glad if you would bail him out.
Arrested? What for?
He did not favor me with his confidence in that respect, sir.
This is a bit sticky, Jeeves.
Precisely, sir.
I collected old George, and we staggered into a taxi. At the police station, we sat on a wooden bench in some sort of anteroom, and presently a policeman appeared, leading in Cyril. My experience is that a fellow never really looks his best just after he's come out of a cell, and Cyril was no exception. He had a black eye and a torn collar, and in some was nothing to write home about, especially if one were writing to Aunt Agatha. He was a thin, tall fellow with light hair and pale blue goggly eyes, which made him look like one of the rarer kinds of fish. Hello, Mr. Bassington. I got your message.
Oh, are you Bertie Wooster?
Absolutely. And this is my pal, George Caffin, the playwright.
Well, I must say, this is a rotten country.
Oh, I don't know. You know? Don't you know?
Well, why don't the policemen in New York dress properly?
I don't see anything wrong.
I mean to say, why don't they wear helmets like they do in London? Why do they look like postmen? It is most confusing. I was simply standing on the pavement, looking at things, when a fellow who looked like a postman prodded me in the ribs with a club. I didn't see why I should have postmen prodding me.
The point is well taken. What did you do?
I gave him a shove, you know. I've got a frightful temper, you know. And then he biffed me in the eye and lugged me off to this beastly place.
I'll fix it, I said, and I hauled out the bankroll and went off to open negotiations, leaving Cyril to talk to George. I don't mind admitting that I was a bit perturbed and had a kind of foreboding feeling. As long as this chump stayed in New York, I was responsible for him, and he didn't strike me as the kind of person one would want to be responsible for, not without handcuffs. I mused over Cyril that night, and I couldn't help feeling that this visit of his was going to be one of those times that try men's souls, and so on. I hauled out Aunt Agatha's letter of introduction and reread it, and there was no doubt she considered it my mission in life to shield him from harm while on the premises. At least he had struck up a friendship with George Caffin, old George being a steady sort of a guy. After I had gotten him out of his dungeon cell, he and old George had gone off together, as chummy as brothers, to watch the afternoon rehearsal of Ask Dad. I felt pretty easy in my mind while George had his eye on him. I had gotten this far in my meditations when Jeeves came in with a message from Aunt Agatha, and this is what it said.
Has Cyril Bassington called yet? On no account introduce him into the theatrical circus. Vitally important. Letter follows.
Oh, this is terrible, Jeeves.
Yes, sir.
Very upsetting. So disturbing.
Will there be anything further tonight, sir?
This is very unsympathetic, Jeeves. Of course, it is the socks, isn't it? My purple socks. Well, if you are going to let them rankle you that much, then you are excused. Good night.
Good night, sir.
He floated away, and I sank down to think the thing over. A half hour later, there was a ring at the door, and when I answered it, there stood Cyril, looking festive.
May I come in for a bit? I have some good news.
Well, actually, I was just...
Thank you. What's this? A note from your Aunt Agatha. A new account introduced him into theater circles. Whoops, I guess I shouldn't have read that. But it is really very funny considering...
Considering what?
My good news. Good old Caffin has given me a small part in that musical comedy of his, Ask Dad. Only a bit part, you know, but still, there is meat in the role. You know, I've always wanted to go on the stage, but my jolly old governor wouldn't have it. Put his foot down with a bang and turned bright purple whenever the subject was mentioned. That's the real reason why I came over here, if you want to know. I knew there wasn't a chance of me being able to work in London without somebody getting onto it and tipping off the governor, so suggested popping over to Washington to broaden my mind. There's nobody to interfere over here, you see, so I can go right ahead.
But your governor will have to know sometime.
That'll be all right. I shall be the star by then, and he won't have a leg to stand on.
It seems to me he'll have one leg to stand on while he kicks me with the other.
Why, where do you come in? What have you got to do with it?
I introduced you to George Caffin.
So you did, old boy, so you did. I'd quite forgotten. I ought to have thanked you before. Well, so long. There's an early rehearsal of Ask Dad tomorrow morning, and I must be off. It's funny the show is called Ask Dad, when that's just what I'm not going to do. See what I mean? Well, pip, pip, cheerio!
Toodaloo. Well, there was nothing else to do but confront Caffin. I headed immediately to the theater. George, what's all this about Cyril Bassington Bassington?
What about him?
He tells me you've given him a part in your show.
Oh, yes, just a few lines.
But I've had messages from Aunt Agatha telling me emphatically not to let him participate in the theater.
I'm sorry, but Cyril is just the type I need for that part. He'd simply got to be himself.
But, George, my Aunt Agatha will hold me responsible.
She'll cut you out of your will?
It isn't a question of money. But, of course, you've never met my Aunt Agatha, so it's rather hard to explain. But she's sort of a human vampire bat, and she'll make things most fearfully unpleasant for me.
Sounds like she needs to have a stake driven through her.
But, George...
Good night.
But, George, you... But he was already gone. I felt as if I hadn't a friend in the world. I was so worked up, I hurried home and banged on Jeeves' door. It wasn't the sort of thing I'd normally do, but it seemed to me that now was the time for all good men to come to the aid of the party, so to speak, and that it was up to Jeeves to rally round, even if it broke up his beauty sleep. Jeeves emerged in a brown dressing gown.
Sir?
I'm sorry to wake you up, Jeeves, but all sorts of disturbing things have been happening.
I was not asleep. It is my practice on retiring to read a few pages of some instructive book.
That's good. If you've been exercising the old bean, it's probably in mid-season form for tackling problems. Jeeves, Mr. Bassington Bassington is going to act in a theater production.
Indeed, sir?
You don't get it. Here's the point. His family is dead set against him going on the stage. There will be no end of trouble if he isn't stopped. And what's worse, my Aunt Agatha will blame me.
I see, sir.
Well, can't you think of some way of stopping him?
Not, I confess, at the moment, sir.
Well, have a stab at it.
I will give the matter my utmost consideration, sir. Will there be anything further tonight?
I hope not. I've had all I can stand already.
Very good, sir.
And he floated off to his lair. The part which old George had written for the chump Cyril took about 2 pages of typescript, but it might have been Hamlet, the way that poor misguided pinhead worked himself to the bone over it. If I had heard him say his lines once, I've heard him 12 times in the first couple of days. And all the time Jeeves remained cold and distant over the purple socks. Then, in the middle of it all, Aunt Agatha's letter arrived. It took her about 6 pages to do justice to Cyril's father's feelings in regard to his going on the stage, and about 6 more to give me a kind of sketch of what she would say, think, and do if I did not keep him clear of injurious influences while he was in America. The letter came by way of the afternoon mail, and I didn't even wait to ring the bell. I whizzed for the kitchen, bleeding for Jeeves, and butted into the middle of a regular tea party of sorts. Seated at the table were a depressed-looking man, who might have been a valet or something, and a boy in a Norfolk suit. The small boy's eyes hit me like a bullet and stopped me in my tracks. They were cold, clammy, accusing sort of eyes. And he looked at me as if I were something Cuthbert the cat had brought in after a ramble among the local trash cans. He was a stoutish infant with a lot of freckles and a good deal of jam on his face. I didn't know what else to say except, hello, 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 what? There didn't seem to be much else to say. The stripling stared at me in a nasty sort of way through the jam.
What's your name?
My name? Oh, Wooster, don't you know, and whatnot.
My pop's richer than you are.
I see. Say, Jeeves, can you spare a moment? I want to show you something.
Very good, sir. Excuse me.
Who is your little friend, Sidney the Sunbeam?
The young gentleman, sir.
It's a loose way of describing him, but I know what you mean.
I trust I was not taking a liberty in entertaining him, sir.
Oh, not a bit. If that's your idea of a big afternoon, you go ahead.
I happened to meet the young gentleman taking a walk with his father's valet, sir, whom I used to know somewhat intimately, and I ventured to invite them both to join me here.
Well, never mind about him, Jeeves. Read this letter.
Yes. Very disturbing, sir.
What are we going to do about it?
At the moment, sir, I am at a loss. I'll get it, sir. It is Mr. Bassington.
Say, Bertie, I want your advice. You know this part of mine. How do you think I should dress for it? What I mean is, the first scene is laid out in a hotel of sorts at about 3 p.m. What should I wear?
You'd better consult Jeeves.
Ah, splendid idea.
I'm right here, sir.
Oh, you gave me quite a start, Jeeves. I just wanted to have a syllable or two with you. It's this way. Hello, who's this?
Ah, yes, sir. This is the young master.
Fish face.
What?
You've got a face like a fish.
He spoke as if Cyril were more to be pitied than censured. I have to admit, whenever I looked at Cyril's face, I always had a feeling that he couldn't have gotten that way without it being mostly his own fault. I found myself warming to this child. It seemed to take Cyril a moment or two to really grasp the thing, and then he burst out with,
What? I will not stand here and be berated by
you. I wouldn't have a face like that. Not if you gave me $1,000,000. Blup, blup, Mr. Fishface.
Why, you little...
Please, sir, he's just a boy. I'll see them out immediately.
Thank you, Jeeves. What a frightful little brute. Wooster?
I don't know who he was. I never saw him before today.
Wait, did you hear that? It sounded like the boy yelled out something about Jeeves promising him $1 if he called me, something aquatic.
That sounds pretty unlikely to me. Why would Jeeves do that?
I have no idea.
I mean, Jeeves doesn't care what sort of face you have.
No, I suppose not. Well, I'll be going. Toodaloo!
And cheerio and all that jazz. It must have been about a week after this little episode that George Caffin asked me if I would care to go around and see a run-through of his show. Ask Dad, it seemed, was to open out of town in Schenectady on the following Monday, and this was to be a sort of preliminary dress rehearsal. The thing was billed to start at 8 o'clock, so I rolled up at 10:15 so as not have to wait too long before they began. They all were working on costumes, and the dress parade was still going on. George was on the stage talking to Bloomfield, the manager. Presently, George hopped down off the stage and came and joined me, and fairly soon after that the curtain went up. I can't quite recall what the plot of Ask Dad was about, but I do know that it seemed able to jog all around all right without much help from Cyril. I was rather puzzled at first. From listening to Cyril, I had gotten the impression that he was pretty well the backbone of the show, and that the rest of the company didn't do much except go on and fill in when he happened to be off stage. I sat there for nearly half an hour waiting for him to make his entrance until suddenly there he was, leaning against a potted palm, trying to appear intelligent while the heroine sang a song about love being something like which, for the moment, has slipped my memory. After the second refrain, he began to dance in the company with a dozen or so equally weird birds, a painful spectacle for everyone present. The dance had just finished, and Cyril and his pals had shuffled off into the wings when a voice spoke up from the darkness on my right.
Pop?
I peered into the shadows. Who should it be but Jeeves' little playmate with the freckles? He was now strolling down the aisle with his hands in his pockets as if the place belonged to him.
Pop, that number's no good.
Don't you like it, son?
It gives me a pain.
You're dead right.
You want something zippy there. A bit of jazz, maybe.
Quite right, my boy. I'll make a note of it. All right, go on.
I say, George, who the dickens is that kid?
Oh, it's Bloomfield's son. Now we're going to have a hell of a time.
Does he always run things like this?
Always.
But why does old Bloomfield listen to him?
Oh, nobody seems to know. It may be a purely fatherly love, or he may regard him as a mascot. I think he believes the kid has exactly the amount of intelligence of the average member of the audience, and what makes a hit with him will please the general public, while conversely, what he doesn't like will be too rotten for anyone. The kid is a pest, a wart, a pain in the neck.
The rehearsal went on. After another long interlude, the moment arrived for Cyril's big scene. I was still a trifle hazy about the plot, but I had discerned that Cyril was some sort of an English peer who had come over to America for some reason. So far, he had had only two lines. One was,
"Oh, I say."
And the other was,
"Yes, by Jove."
But I seemed to recollect that he had had more lines than that, and before long he bobbed out from backstage, breezed down the center, and toed the mark for his most substantial chunk of dialogue. The heroine had been saying something, I forget what, and all the chorus, with Cyril at their head, had begun to surge round her in the restless sort of way performers always do when there's a number coming on.
"Oh, I say, you know, you mustn't say that, really."
But before he had a chance to say another line, our little friend with the freckles had risen to lodge a protest.
"Pa."
"Yes, son?"
"That one's no good."
"Which one, my boy?"
"The one with a face like a fish."
"But they all have faces like a fish, son."
"I see what you mean, Pop, but I meant the ugly one."
"Which ugly one? That one with the English accent?"
"Yep. He's rotten."
"I thought so myself."
"He's lousy. Pitiful."
"You're dead right, my boy. I noticed it as well."
These harsh words hit the old Bassington family pride like an oncoming train. Cyril started to get pink in the ears, and then in the nose, and then in the cheeks, until about a quarter of a minute he looked pretty much like an explosion in a tomato cannery.
"What do you mean, you snot-nosed little so-and-so?"
"What do you mean? Don't yell at my son like that."
"I've got a good mind to come down and spank that little brute."
"What?"
Old Bloomfield swelled up like a pumped-up tire. He got rounder than ever.
"See here, mister, I don't know your name, but..."
"My name's Bassington, and the Bassingtons aren't accustomed to your..."
"Well, Mr. Bassethound, I don't care what your family might be accustomed to."
"Yeah, you gotta work good if you want to work for my Pop."
"I don't want any guff from you."
"What's that? Do you understand that this boy is my son?"
"Yes, I do, and you both have my sympathies."
"You're fired! Get out of my theater!"
About 10:30 the next morning, just as I was lubricating my brain with a cup of tea, Jeeves filtered into my bedroom and said that Cyril was waiting to see me in the sitting room. "How does he look, Jeeves?"
"Sir?"
"What does Mr. Bassington look like?"
"It is hardly my place, sir, to criticize the facial peculiarities of your friends."
"I don't mean that. I mean, does he appear agitated?"
Not noticeably, sir. His manner is tranquil.
That's odd.
Sir?
Nothing. Show him in, will you? I had expected to see Cyril looking a bit overwrought, complete with quivering ganglions. He seemed pretty ordinary and fairly cheerful.
Hello, Wooster, old boy.
Hello, Basington. Basington, how goes it?
I just looked in to say goodbye.
Goodbye?
Yes, I'm off to Washington in an hour. You know, Wooster, I've been thinking it all over, and it doesn't seem fair to my old governor going on stage and all. What do you think?
I see what you mean.
I mean to say, he sent me over here to broaden my mind, or words to that effect, and I can't help thinking it would be a bit of a shock for the old boy if I went into the theater instead. I don't know if you understand me, but what I mean to say is it's a question of conscience.
Can you leave the show without upsetting everything?
Oh, that's all right. I've explained everything to Bloomfield and he understands. Of course, he's sorry to lose me, said he didn't see how he could fill my place and all that, but even if it puts him in a bit of a bind, I think I'm right to resign my part, don't you?
Oh, absolutely.
I thought you'd agree with me. Well, I ought to be going. Awfully glad to have seen you and all that sort of rot. Pip, pip!
Toodaloo. He sallied forth, having told all those bold lies with the clear blue pop-eyed gaze of a young child. I rang for Jeeves.
Sir?
Did you put that pie-faced infant up to ragging Mr. Bassington Bassington while he was on stage?
Sir?
Oh, you know what I mean. Did you tell him to get Mr. Bassington Bassington sacked from the Ask Dad company?
I would not take such a liberty, sir. It is possible that young Master Bloomfield may have gathered from casual remarks of mine that I did not consider the stage altogether a suitable sphere for Mr. Bassington Bassington.
I say, Jeeves, you know you're a bit of a marvel.
I endeavor to give satisfaction, sir.
And I'm awfully obliged, if you know what I mean. Aunt Agatha would have had 16 or 17 fits if you hadn't headed him off.
I fancy there might have been some little friction and unpleasantness, sir. I am laying out the blue suit with the thin red stripe, sir. I fancy the effect will be pleasing.
Oh, and Jeeves, you may dispose of my purple socks.
Very good, sir. I'm certain that there is some indigent who will be most appreciative.
And so once again, Jeeves saves the day. Another friend is saved from certain disaster. And perhaps most important of all, Bertie is once again fashionably attired in conservative stockings befitting his station. We hope you've enjoyed this evening's presentation of Jeeves and the Chump Cyril by P.G. Wodehouse. A script adaptation by Brad Buchanan. Our players from the Maplewood Barn Radio Theater were Jeff Martin as Bertie, Byron Scott as Jeeves, Terry Yates as Cyril, Michael Tooley was George and Bloomfield, and Molly Dodge was the boy. The program engineered by Darren Helwedge, also your narrator. We hope you'll join us again next Friday evening for another classic story right here on KBIA.